All right, everyone. I've got it at 7 o'clock. So let's go up 7:01. So let's go ahead and get started. I do have just a couple of announcements for you. This is class 6 of 6 for transforming problems. And so Robbie will start teaching momentarily. I did want to mention also or remind you that starting tomorrow, we've got Don Hendrick joining us virtually, and he'll be with us from Tuesday, August 25th through Sunday, the 30th. There's a whole bunch of different topics that he'll be teaching on, so you can see that schedule, as well as information about sponsoring his visit on the Kadampa Center website. So just there's a banner that scrolls. You can just click right on the Don Hendrick banner there. And we will do our next Discovering Buddhism module starting September 14th, so the Sunday after Labor Day. And Hemant will be teaching that, and it is on the wisdom of emptiness. And that brings us to our like second to the last module, which is amazing. So we should finish out this two-year program by the end of the year, it looks like. If you have kept track of your completion chart, which is on the back of that paper called, well, it's not really a paper now, it's online, it's called About the Module, and the second page of that is the completion card, so you can, if you want to get the certificate from Kadampa Center for Discovering Buddhism, just fill that out and email it to me. If you can scan it or take a picture, email it to me, I'll send it off to Robbie to look at and sign off on. And let's see. Oh, yes. And certainly if you're just joining us for the first time, whether it's via streaming on YouTube or via Zoom, feel free to use the chat box feature on either of those, whether it's Zoom or YouTube, and I will be monitoring those for questions and comments. So I think that's all. I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Robbie now.
Okay. Thank you, Linda. Welcome, everyone. It's hard to believe that we're already on the sixth class. It seems like we just time has kind of taken on a new meaning in this day and age. So it seems like we just started, but actually we're just finishing. So we will begin with our prayers. If Linda can bring those up, I'll read them. You can mute yourself and read them along with me, and then we'll go into our meditation. Thank you. And we'll begin with taking refuge in generating bodhicitta 3 times, 4 immeasurables 3 times, and then the short mandala offering. These prayers are to prepare our mind and help us set our motivation for the meditation and the discussion that's to follow. I go for a refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for a refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends or hatred for enemies. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends or hatred for enemies. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends or hatred for enemies. This ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun, and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratnam Mandala Kam Niryatayami. Okay. So let me get a little bit more light here. And we'll begin with our first meditation of the evening. Begin by checking your posture. I assume most people are sitting in a chair, so sit with your back a little bit straighter than you normally sit. Don't lean back. Not rigid, but a little bit more vertical than you usually sit. Head is maybe a couple degrees just in front of the vertical, but not drooped and not leaning to one side or the other. Eyes are either slightly open so that just a little bit of light without the recognition of shapes and colors shines into our eyes, or lightly closed. Our mouth is lightly closed, our lips slightly touching, our tongue on the gum behind our upper teeth on the hard palate. So our jaw is relaxed, not clenched. Our shoulders are relaxed and down. A little bit back, so our chest is open. Our upper arms are away from the sides of our body so that air can pass in and out. Our right hand is on our left hand with our thumbs touching, slightly below the level of the navel. And if we're sitting in a chair, our feet are flat on the floor. We can rest them on a cushion if we want. If we're sitting on a cushion, our legs are crossed in a position that we find comfortable and steady. So starting at the top, check your posture. Identify any sources of tension or discomfort and address those now so they don't become a distraction during the meditation. The posture is self-maintaining. We don't have to think about it once it's established. And also at a deeper level, it says it opens up some of the energy channels just in front of our spine that flow from our head down to the level of our genitalia. And the winds that our mind rides on travel up and down those channels. Not something you can see when you dissect a body, but they're there according to the Buddhist teachings. And having established the posture, begin by taking three deep breaths from the abdomen, with the stomach expanding on the in-breath, so the diaphragm is pulled down, and then the stomach contracts towards the spine on the out-breath. Just three times. You don't want to keep breathing that way. It slows down the pulse, and you can actually faint if you continue to breathe that way. But just three times. And now we allow our breath to return to its normal pattern. And again, we establish our motivation. as much as possible, we generate the bodhicitta motivation, the wish to become enlightened so that we can benefit others. Really two aspects, the wish to become enlightened in order to benefit others. Together, that makes the bodhicitta motivation, the great motivation, the most powerful and meaningful motivation for anything we do. And tonight it's particularly for the meditation and the discussion to follow. And now we'll do our actual meditation. It's a concentration meditation. The mind on the movement of the breath in and out through the nostrils. Just the physical sensation. Mind directly perceiving the movement of air. So that ideally there is no duality, but mind and air movement become as if one. Mind directly perceiving the movement of air, taking on the qualities of what it perceives. Because the mind is lacking in any fixed qualities. So we become what we think, what we perceive, what we're aware of. So just mind on breath, over and over again. And whenever the mind wanders off, we gently bring it back. And that's the meditation for the next 7 or 8 minutes. And we can end our meditation with a dedication. We kind of mentally give ourselves a pat on the back. We acknowledge that we've done something a little bit out of the ordinary, something that has made a positive imprint on our mind stream, justly developing our ability to concentrate as a positive action. And we think, may that positive imprint not be lost, but may it ripen in the future in a way that benefits all sentient beings. And you can relax your concentration. Linda, can you bring up the 8 verses, please? Okay, this is the 8 verses of Thought Transformation. This is a translation by His Holiness the Dalai Lama, but the 8 verses were written by the Tibetan master Langri Tampa, and he lived in the 11th century. Don't quote me on these dates. I'm approximating them, the 11th century. And his two main sources for his text were Shantideva, the Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, which was in the 400s, I think, and then various texts by Lama Atisha, which were in the 800s. And Shantideva and Lama Atisha took their texts from teachings of the Buddha that are found in the sutras, which were his oral teachings that have been preserved. So it went from... Langri Tampa wasn't making any of this up. He was just organizing and kind of giving us the Cliff Notes versions of teachings that are much more difficult to understand in the original text. So this is a very short, pithy summation of the Buddhist teachings on thought transformation, or what we refer to as the Lojong teachings. And there are lots of other texts on Lojongs, but we're using this particular one. It's one of the most famous ones, and it's short and to the point. So let's read this together. Again, put yourself on mute, and I'll just read it out loud, but we can read it together. Determined to accomplish all success, I shall always practice holding dear all sentient beings, who are more precious than wish-fulfilling gems. Wherever I go and whomever I accompany, I shall practice seeing myself as the lowest of all and sincerely hold others dear and supreme. In all actions, I shall examine my mind, and the moment an unsubdued thought arises, endangering myself and others, I shall face and avert it. Whenever I see a being of wicked nature who is overwhelmed by heavy non-virtue and suffering, I shall hold him dear as if I had discovered a precious treasure difficult to find. When out of jealousy others treat me badly with abuse, insult, and the like, I shall practice accepting defeat and offering the victory to others. When someone I have benefited and in whom I have great hopes gives me terrible harm, I shall practice regarding him or her as my holy guru. In short, both directly and indirectly, I offer every benefit and happiness to all my mothers. Secretly, I shall practice taking all their harmful actions and suffering upon myself. With all these practices, undefiled by the stains of the superstitions of the 8 worldly dharmas, by perceiving all dharmas as illusory, I shall practice without grasping to release all sentient beings from bondage. So as I said, these are about thought transformation. They're not about changing the external world, turning other people into things they're not. They're about changing our mind so that the way we relate to the world around us is different. And this is really Buddhist psychology, and some people refer to this as being your own therapist. It's really changing the way we react and interpret and respond to others. And we have 8 different techniques here. It's kind of like 8 different tools. And we may find some of them very useful and some of them not very useful at all. And that's fine. It's good to be familiar with all of them and have them in your sack available when you need them. But there may be a couple that you find particularly useful at this point in your life. And if you just want to deal with a couple, that's good. Number 7 is what's referred to as Tonglen, giving and taking, which for many people is one of a major part of their spiritual practice. But if that one doesn't speak to you, just set it aside. That's fine. But these are very practical, everyday sort of practices. They're to help us where we are right now. This is not about developing infinite compassion and infinite wisdom. It's helping us to deal with day-to-day issues that we find disturb our mind, that make us upset, that make us respond out of anger and irritability and greed and attachment. So we're changing our mind so it responds in a different way to the difficult situations that we'll inevitably meet. When we become a Buddha, we don't have to practice thought transformation. There's nothing in our mind stream that we need to transform. But for most of us where we are now, there are a lot of thoughts that don't work, that cause us to be unhappy, that cause us to suffer, that cause our mind to be disturbed and distracted. And this is a way of dealing with them right now. So these are very practical, everyday teachings that we can use right away. Okay, so you can take those down, Linda. Thank you. Good. Okay, so we've gone through 7 of these. Now we'll come to number 8, and I'll give a little explication of that, and then we'll do some meditation and take any comments. Okay, so His Holiness's translation again goes, with all these practices, undefiled by the stains of the superstitions of the 8 worldly dharmas, by perceiving all dharmas as illusory, I shall practice without grasping to realize all sentient beings from bondage. This is a wonderful setup for the next DV module, which is the wisdom of emptiness, because he's really bringing in the necessity of an understanding of emptiness to do these practices in the most beneficial way. So with all these practices, that's referring to the 7 previous verses, okay, undefiled by the stains of the superstitions of the 8 worldly dharmas. Okay, what does that mean? Dharma is a Sanskrit word, and it's typically translated as that which separates us from suffering. Okay? Dharma. We talk about the teachings of the Buddha as the Buddha Dharma. The Dharma is that which separates us from suffering, that causes us to free ourselves from suffering. So the teachings of the Buddha fall into that category. But in this case, he's qualifying it as the 8 worldly or mundane or of this world dharmas. So it's really it's kind of an ironic or sarcastic way that he's using the word dharma here, because the 8 worldly dharmas do not separate us from suffering. Okay, these are 8 things that we mistakenly think will separate us from suffering, and they inevitably fail to do so. The 8 worldly dharmas. So we think of them as 4 pairs. First is pleasure, and pain. Okay. Okay. Pleasure, pain, gain, loss, praise, blame, respect, and shame. And those are translated in different ways. Again, first pair is pleasure, pain. Okay. Second is gain and loss, praise and blame, respect and poor reputation or shame. Okay. So most of us to some degree ascribes to the idea if we get all of those on my left-hand side, okay, pleasure, gain, praise, respect, and we get rid of all those on my right-hand side, we've got it made. And we go through life trying to accumulate as much of the ones on the left-hand side and ridding our life of the ones on the right-hand side, which, you know, if we said, I think we know at some level that's a futile activity because life is going to be made up of all of those. We can't get rid of those. We can't accumulate nothing but these, mainly because of our karma. Okay. We've created the karma through countless past lifetimes to inevitably experience all eight of these worldly dharmas. Okay. But the more we crave the ones on the left-hand side, the more we are attached to having them. When we experience those on the right-hand side, we suffer. Our attachment or craving for one, our attachment or craving to not having the others, that causes our suffering. Okay. It's not so much actually having these that causes us to suffer, but our attachment to not having them is the real cause of the mental suffering. Our inability to accept that our life, the results of our karma, is inevitably going to be a mixture of these two, of both sides. So as the Langri Thapa is saying, we need to do these practices as outlined in the previous seven verses of the verses of mind transformation, undefiled, okay, by the eight worldly dharmas, okay? We need to understand what the eight worldly dharmas, and we need to begin to set them aside, okay, so that they don't contaminate our spiritual practice. So we enter into it without this craving or attachment for things to be a certain way. Okay? So let's see. With all these practices undefiled by the stains of the superstitions of the eight worldly dharmas, okay? So doing these practices free of the eight worldly dharmas as much as we possibly can. I mean, it's a process. We can't just drop them immediately from our lives because we've lived all this time striving after them by perceiving all dharmas as illusory. Okay. Now here he's using dharma in its true sense. He means the teachings of the Buddha, the reality of the world, all dharmas as illusory. And another way we can translate illusory there is like a dream. Or like a mirage, okay? Not saying that they are a dream, but they have the illusory or impermanent or empty characteristics of a dream. So what he's saying is even dharma, even enlightenment, even the qualities of a Buddha, infinite wisdom and compassion, and even our own achievement of various spiritual attainments, all of those are empty of inheriting systems. And that's a very Buddhist phrase, and it's kind of jargony, but it means that it lacks permanent inherent existence. It's not saying that they don't exist, but they don't exist in the permanent fixed way that we think they do, that they are infinitely changing and they are dependent upon causes and conditions, and they are made up of various components. So enlightenment and Buddhahood and practice of the eight verses, they do exist, but they don't exist in the way we think they do, in a solid way. So this undercuts attachment, okay? Clinging. The definition of attachment in Buddhism is overestimating the good qualities of something. So we can even be attached to compassion or wisdom. We can cling to it, grasp it, crave it, cling to it, an unhealthy relationship that's based on, ultimately, on seeing things as inherently existent. We think this person really is that way. And if I have them, that will make me happy. And we can bring that same mindset to our spiritual practice. If I can just develop this, that's going to make me happy. So we practice the verses of thought transformation by realizing that they are the truth that is contained in them. It exists, but it's empty, empty of inherent existence. So I shall practice without grasping to release all sentient beings from bondage. So that's what we talked about earlier in the meditation. That's the bodhicitta motivation. So by practicing the eight verses without contamination by the eight worldly dharmas, by seeing them as empty, we shall strive to release all sentient beings from bondage, from suffering. Okay, relieve the suffering of all beings. Okay, so that's a lot that he's kind of summing it all up. This is not really another technique for thought transformation. This is how to do it in the most correct or most powerful way. So let me just read it again so you can make sure you can understand it, what he exactly is saying. With these practices, undefiled by the stains of the superstitions of the eight worldly dharmas, by perceiving all dharmas as illusory, I shall practice without grasping to release all sentient beings from bondage. So this is, he's really talking about the correct way to practice the verses of thought transformation. And that may not be possible for us, okay? It's hard to think about all these things. You know, when we're in the middle of an argument with someone and we're trying to think, oh, what verse of thought transformation would come in useful here? You know, we can't, oh, I'm not going to worry about the eight worldly dharmas. I'm not going to worry about the emptiness. I'm just going to try and calm my mind a little bit. But this is the ideal we can aim to. So do we have any questions or comments at this point? You can either put them in the chat or you can turn on your, let's see what's in the chat.
Yeah, we have one from Karen, and she asks, so is that saying that enlightenment is not permanent?
Yes, okay. But the word permanent, it has a very special meaning in Buddhism when we use it. It means not changing, okay? It doesn't mean going out of existence, okay? So that the state of enlightenment does not go, once we achieve it, it does not go out of existence during time, but it is constantly changing. So it's said to be not permanent, and it is empty of inherent existence. There is nothing that is empty, that is not empty. Everything that happens, every phenomena is empty. Everything. Now, there are a couple permanent phenomena. This is where we're really getting into Buddhist cosmology. I think they're either three or four, and I can never remember them. One is the space in between particles is empty, kind of like the image is like the sky of the stars. The space in between the stars we see is permanent. Yeah, not empty, it is permanent, in that it is unchanging. Another, this is a more interesting one. Well, another one is that when we completely eliminate a negative mental factor from our mind stream, for example, when we completely eliminate anger, we've used up all our anger karma, and we've done all our meditation so that we no longer get angry. That is said to be permanent because that is unchanging, because anger never arises again. And there are a couple others, but the vast majority of things, including enlightenment, are impermanent, and everything is empty. There's nothing that's not empty.
So are we saying, like, once you become enlightened, you could become unenlightened, or are you just saying that enlightenment continues to...
It's changing according to the situation, yeah. Once you become enlightened, you cannot become unenlightened, no.
Okay.
But the nature of that enlightenment is continually changing moment to moment.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's see. Naga says, enlightenment is not permanent. Yes, correct. Okay, what we just talked about. And Matt, my question relates to last week. When doing the practice, I felt like I was tapping into a new or different part of me that was doing the taking and giving. What would you call that part of the self? Well, I can't really explain your experience, but I think it is part of you. It's not something that wasn't there, okay? But I think hopefully you're tapping into your natural compassion and love, okay? The wish that others be free of suffering and that they be happy, which we all have in us to a small degree, and we need to nurture it and let it grow, okay? But it was nothing outside yourself that you were tapping into, I would guess, okay? It's your own potential that frequently lies there very untapped, yeah. So that's kind of neat, thank you. And then Lana says, everything is empty. So practice too, yes. And practice doesn't, no, okay. Empty doesn't mean doesn't exist, doesn't mean people aren't suffering, doesn't mean enlightenment doesn't exist. It just means they exist in a different way than we normally think them do. They do. They exist in a much more fluid, interdependent way than we think they do. And by relating to people and ideas and teachings as permanent or fixed, that's ultimately the cause of all our problems. So this is not saying anything doesn't exist. It doesn't say people aren't suffering. It's definitely not saying that because their suffering is empty, it's meaningless. No. In fact, when we understand emptiness correctly, it's said, all this becomes much more meaningful. Okay? Because we see how everything is connected and interdependent. And I'll leave it for Hemet in the next class. But yeah, that's going at the verge. Most of the time we're going into the extreme of realism. We think everything is fixed, solid, real. So then we start to set that aside. Then we fall into the extreme of nihilism, saying nothing exists and nothing matters. And so in Buddhism, we always talk about the middle way. We're not saying things don't exist, but we're saying they don't exist the way we normally think they do. Okay?
And I think, Joy, did I see your hand raised a minute ago? Did you have a question? Okay.
Okay. So for our last meditation, I would like, Linda, I'd like you to bring up the eight verses again. And we'll do our motivation. And I'll read the eighth verse just our instructions on how to do it. And then I want you to just pick one that speaks to you today in your life where it is right now and work with that on your own. So there won't be any guide because people will be working on a different verse. And just first read it several times. Make sure you know what it, you understand it. Think about what the words mean. Then bring it into your day-to-day life. Maybe an experience you've had sometime in the last week. And how would this make that different? Okay? So begin by checking your posture. I think everybody's familiar with that. Three deep breaths from the abdomen. Now allow your breath to return to its normal pattern and set your motivation for the meditation to follow. And now just a couple, a minute or two of concentration, mind on the breath, to settle your mind, not to fall asleep. Mind has become more focused and actually more alert. When we meditate, our mind is in a very alert and aware, but calm, undisturbed state. It's definitely not falling asleep or spacing out. And now I'm going to read verse 8. This is kind of how to best do these meditations. And we may not achieve this perfection, but it's something to aspire to. With all these practices, undefiled by the stains of the superstitions of the 8 worldly dharmas, by perceiving all dharmas as illusory, I shall practice without grasping to release all sentient beings from bondage. So now you can look at your computer screen and pick one of the verses from 1 to 7 to work with for the next few minutes. Just read the verse yourself once or twice. Get clear on what the words mean, what he's talking about. If you pick the Tonglen verse, you can actually do the Tonglen practice. If you do pick one of the other verses, you can imagine the difficult situation you've been in recently and see if you can bring this new type of thought to that situation. So it's reframing the way we normally see things. And just do your own meditation on that for the next 5 minutes or so. And as we wind up our meditation, take a moment to reflect that everything is illusory, is empty of inherent existence. It exists, but not the way we think it does. Lama Zopa Rinpoche, when he teaches, always emphasizes that. And we can do a dedication, acknowledging the positive energy we've created, which is empty, and has made an imprint on our mind stream, which is also empty, that we hope will ripen in the future for the benefit of all sentient beings. And you can relax your concentration. So that is the end of our module on transforming problems. I'd like to thank Linda for guiding us through the electronic maze so skillfully. It's been great. I'd like to thank everybody who's participated and contributed. Again, I want to highly recommend the teachings by Don Hendrick. He's one of the best Western teachers in the FBMT. So if you can attend any of those online, that would be great. I think tomorrow night is tapping into feminine energy or something, yes. Tara practice. And then also want to remind people that Wednesday at noon, there will be a Zoom YouTube puja or prayer service, Medicine Buddha, for Geshe Gelug, who is leaving Patagonia to come back to Kadampa Center. And he's got a very arduous 4-day journey that begins with 24 hours straight in a car. And then there are 2 long plane trips separated by a couple night stays in hotels. So he's got a rough trip ahead of him. So we're hoping that that will be beneficial. So that's going to be online Wednesday at noon and everybody can participate. And then the next module will be, I think we set it up good for emptiness. So Emmett is going to do a great job on that. He's always does a good job and wonderfully prepared. So thank you, everyone, and stay healthy.
Thank you so much, Robbie. Yeah. Thank you for being here and guiding us through transforming problems.
And it looks like it's getting ready to rain. I think it's rained 4 out of these 6 Monday nights or something. Yeah. Okay, everyone, take care.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.
We'll see you in September. Yeah. Don't forget to register for Don Hendrick on the website.
I have to say something.
Robbie,
I cleared my doubt with the Geshe Sangpo last week. So it was helpful for me.
Great. Good.
Thank you.
Glad to hear that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, everyone.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, bye-bye, everyone.
Bye, everybody. See you in a couple weeks, if not sooner.
Bye.
Bye.